It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
All right. And what other businesses have you been in before? Because I know Extremist is really a new, fairly new product, right? So
it is.
What were you doing before that? What other business have you been in?
Back in 1982, I got in with the original guys who thought of paintball. So,
okay.
So I started with that, helped write the original rules for some of the games, and I've been at it. I actually still have one location left. I've kind of dwindled out of it.
Oh, so you owned a bunch of locations.
I owned locations, stores.
Okay.
And
these were the guys that actually developed the concept of having a pellet with paint in it and shoot it at people?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, they came up with they found the markers in a farm catalog. They were used for cattle and trees. Back then it was oil-based paint, so it didn't come out. We had to have turpentine at the play fields to get it out of you, hair and everything.
Right.
And then it evolved from there.
Okay. And was that a lucrative business?
Yeah. The thing for me is it gave me enough time, gave me enough time on my hands to run the business and also to be able to take off for a couple months at a time.
Okay.
Which is leaving it with my managers and the referees.
Right.
And that afforded me time to get out and do my world traveling.
Okay.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, my name's Ron Lakin. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. I am the CEO and inventor of the Extreme Mist portable cooling system and recently what we call the PSS, the personal sanitizing system.
Okay, Ron, thanks for coming on the podcast. You were asking me how are things going out in New Jersey, so I appreciate it. You're in sunny Scottsdale.
Sure.
And New Jersey, actually, it's a little overcast today, but it's supposed to be like 80 by Saturday. So it's not, I remember when my sister went to Arizona State and we went out there for graduation. I guess it was May. It wasn't the middle of the summer and it was so hot. You know, it was like they say it was a dry heat where you live, but nobody's climbing into a pizza oven and that's dry too. So it was like you couldn't be outside without being in a pool like up to your chest in water. It was, and I'm not used to the climate, obviously. So, and I remember you mentioned misters. There's misters like all over the place. They're in restaurants, right? Everybody's because it's so dry.
That's right.
Yeah.
To be honest, it is so hot here. Just throw in one of my Arizona jokes. The nuclear plant could melt down and we wouldn't even know it.
Right. Yeah.
Today it's going to be 111.
Yeah. The moisture just sucks right out of the air. Right.
It does. So obviously this type of climate is great, as you mentioned, for mist systems.
Yeah.
You can go anywhere, just outdoor shopping centers, restaurants, everybody has them installed either via fans or just the straight misters.
Right.
Misters usually up above you quite a ways up in the air.
Right. Like on an awning or something. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And it cools the air down.
Yeah.
And as the air gets cooled down, it drops. It gets heavy. Cool air, of course, falls.
Of course.
So
falls on you.
Yeah, so you get that. Now, of course, that opens it up to the environment and whatever is going on in the ether there because the mist is going to go whichever way the wind blows.
Right.
So with our product, we made it a lot more personable. We put it on the front of our backpack, just like if you would a regular camelback, you have a drink hose over one shoulder.
Right.
And now you have a smaller hose coming over your other shoulder right at chest level. And when you walk, that's aiming out in front of you have a wireless remote control with 8 speeds on it. And for the hiking or riding or running, you want to put it on the lowest speeds.
Right.
And always walking into the mist. You can't get away from it.
All right. So we'll put a lot of that stuff in the show notes. People can go to the website, see the video and see how it works. But let's go back a little bit to, you know, where you're from, how you got started in business. What's your prior experience? I know you're a big outdoors guy. So people can learn about you and your story. So maybe we can start where you're from originally.
Yeah, I was born in Detroit, made it 5 years there, then moved out to Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, so you've been in Arizona the whole time?
Mostly. No, I've wandered around quite a bit,
all
over the place, let alone all over the world. And as soon as I could start traveling, I started heading up to Northern California, where I found gold mining and got a gold claim and started mining underwater for gold. So I've always been underwater for some reason or the other.
Okay. And I didn't know you could still mine for gold. I figured like in the prospecting days that went away. No?
Yeah, you still can. They've put some moratoriums on the underwater dredging now.
Okay.
While they're working out some things, but
there's gold there.
Oh yeah, there's still gold.
Wow.
Generally, we're picking up what the old timers left behind for the most part. The easy gold was already taken up by them. Now it's gold that they just couldn't get to. But we have modern technology to extract it, so it becomes a lot easier.
Got it.
So once in a while, I might run into a pound of nuggets here and there. It's a great feeling.
Okay, yeah. You still do that? Like you still go hike up Northern California?
I still do.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Been doing that since I was a kid.
Okay.
So that led me to the outdoors, of course, because I'd go out for weeks on end mining and
just living off the land and backpacking.
Yeah, when I was a kid, we had, it was like very holes in my wetsuit, freezing all the time, sleeping on rocks, didn't have the modern luxuries, not enough food to eat ever.
Right.
But that was all part of it. And then
you like that company. What's that company? Outward Bound or something that does?
Yeah. Very similar
type of Outward Bound, leader.
Self-imposed, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so, and you usually did this alone? Like you were out in the wilderness living?
No, I'd usually have someone with me on that because it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I would think.
I'd try to have somebody.
Yeah.
And lots of cave-ins, lots of things can happen. You can die very easily.
No, you've heard these stories where people had to cut their hand off to get out of a rock slide and they're alone. Nobody's there.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. So you're a real outdoors guy. So that really led to this stuff. But so what were you, how long ago was this?
I still do it, but I started this when I was 12 years old.
Oh, so you've been a real outdoors guy. Okay. All right. And what other businesses have you been in before? Cause I know Extremist is really a new, fairly new product, right? So
it is.
What were you doing before that? What other business have you been in?
Back in 1982, I got in with the original guys who thought of paintball. So I started with that, helped write the original rules for some of the games, and I've been at it. I actually still have one location left. I've kind of dwindled out of it.
Oh, so you owned a bunch of locations.
I owned locations, stores.
Okay.
And
these were the guys that actually developed the concept of having a pellet with paint in it and shoot it at people?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, they came up with they found the markers in a farm catalog. They were used for cattle and trees. Back then, it was oil-based paint, so it didn't come out. We had to have turpentine at the play fields to get it out of you, out of your hair and everything.
Right.
And then it evolved from there.
Okay. And was that a lucrative business?
Yeah. The thing for me is it gave me enough time, gave me enough time on my hands to run the business and also to be able to take off for a couple months at a time.
Okay.
Which is leaving it with my managers and the referees. Afforded me time to get out and do my world traveling.
Okay. And so you traveled the world. What countries have you been to, or what countries, which is a smaller list, the countries you haven't been to or the countries that you've been to?
There's a lot of countries out there. So I'd have to say where I've been to is a smaller list, but it's pretty large. I need a map. I don't even remember them all. I have to put pins in the map to recollect it, 'cause I've been at it for quite a while.
That's great.
And, burning a few brain cells here and there.
I'm
underwater too long, probably.
Eating some exotic things too, right? Some strange foods and
stuff. Oh yeah, it all comes with the territory. You bet.
Okay. So what happened? So the paintball business kind of wound down. You still have a location.
I do.
Okay. And then what'd you get into after that?
I'm sorry?
What'd you get into after that? Was that this business or no?
I've been in and out of a lot of different businesses my whole life. Okay. And when I'm out on the trail, when I'm out trekking around the world, I usually have a lot of time when you're hiking to go inside your own head.
Right.
And after sometimes 1,000 miles on a journey or something, you're really grabbing at straws because you've been through everything that you can in your head.
Right.
So then the inventing starts.
Okay.
And so I usually always kept a little journal of, and it was mostly hiking products I'd come up with.
Yeah.
But the problem is you can put anything you want in a book and you can think of these things, but pulling the trigger later is the
issue. Very hard. Yeah. For people to get things to market it's an education, right?
It's a whole process and again, an education, but it took me this particular project where I really decided I was going to do one and see it through for better or for worse and take it all the way from the napkin all the way to production and into market. It's a whole different ballgame than just thinking something up. I don't know how many people I talk to that have great ideas. They're just lying in a drawer never somewhere.
Right. Of course. Now, the MIST system is the first idea that you've come up with that you actually move forward with.
It really is, short of some of the, businesses and the paintball and things like that
right,
I was
right.
involved in, and I invented a few things along the way for that sport, but this was really one that I took from a thought in the middle of the desert and actually went ahead and brought it to fruition.
Okay. So what made you think of the idea? You must have been out hiking, obviously, in very hot climates.
I was, I was maybe 300 miles on a hike into the Sahara. And it was about 140 degrees every day coming off the sands.
Holy.
It was brutal. Being from Arizona, I thought I was a tough guy.
Right.
I could bear any heat. I got over there and I wanted to cry like a little baby.
Do you have to shelter during the day and then walk at night or?
Yeah. The only thing we could do, we'd walk till about 11:30, 12. And then we'd take our blankets off, which doubled as our saddle, our blanket.
Right.
It was a very minimalistic trip.
Right.
And so we'd take that and I brought two sticks. And I'd make a little lean-to
right.
and sit under there for 4 to 5 hours every day, just sit there.
Just to get out of the heat.
In the heat.
Yeah, it was still hot, right? Just not in the direct sun.
Oh, it was miserable.
Yeah,
miserable.
So you were with some people and a guide?
I had, I was in Timbuktu in Mali, Africa, where I set off from. Just getting there was a whole nother story. But once I got there.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah, so I set out to find someone who owned camels.
You're right. I was going to say,
really
you said saddles. It wasn't a horse. I know that. So you were on camels in the desert.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So I found a guy who had camels, didn't speak any English. So I found a kid in Timbuktu that did speak some English. And I hired him. And I hired the cameleer, as they're called, the guy who owns the camels. And he used to run up to these salt mines, and that was what my destination was. It was 500 miles north of Timbuktu out in the desert.
Okay.
So, and people would go to these salt mines, and it was a prison at one point back in the last century.
Okay.
And if you got sent there, if you were a dissident,
yeah,
it was mostly political prisoners, you never return. That was your death. And I saw many salt-laden graves to prove that.
Wow.
There's no rock or anything, so they just use salt to make the actual grave itself. And they still do mine out there. So I wanted to go out there. You know, I have a little mining experience, as we mentioned.
Right.
So I wanted to see how it's still done. And that's kind of one of the last caravans that are still running. They still use giant camel caravans to bring back these tombstone-sized slabs, very heavy slabs of salt.
Really?
And the salt, couple hundred years ago, that salt was worth its weight pound for pound
in
gold.
Right, of course, because it was
without salt, there's no life.
Right.
So it was really just a very valuable commodity. And they claim that salt out of that area, the Taudeni salt mines, to be some of the finest salt in the world.
Okay.
If you're a salt connoisseur, I guess.
Yes, yeah. Can you get that kind of salt like in the supermarket?
No, this is solid hard rock salt.
That hasn't even been processed yet.
No, it hasn't been processed or anything, but we did use it like in tea and stuff to make sure that we were getting enough salt in us. I'd swirl just one of these rocks.
Right.
I'd break off a piece and swirl it in my tea.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that when you're in an environment like that, the loss of salt is serious to, you know, you're drinking water and whatever, but you got to make sure you have salt and electrolytes and all those types of things, right?
Yeah, we take it for granted, especially with our processed food. We have more salt than we need.
Yeah.
But yeah, without salt, you die.
Right. So you were looking to do some crazy trip. So you find these salt mines and you're like, I'm going to hike 500 miles in the desert. I might die along the way, but I'm going to do it.
And that's correct. There was another gentleman who had done the trip and he wrote a book on it. And I read his book, Michael Beninoff. And he went out a little differently, though. He went with one of the big caravans. And I did not want to go with a caravan. I wanted
like
to do my own trip.
Like a big tour group?
No.
No, there the is caravan. What's a caravan?
Caravan was like maybe 100, 200, 300 camels with a lot of people that worked to go bring the salt back from the mines.
I see. You don't want to do that.
So I did not want to go with the caravan. And I also went at a time that it was a little bit too hot. Not many caravans were running. We did run into a couple of them.
Okay.
We did not follow that path, especially because Al-Qaeda was out there a lot, and I had to be very careful where we went and stay very low profile due to Al-Qaeda. We had left one village, the last village that was out there, and right after we left, they went in and caused some mayhem and killed some people. And
wow.
So, especially with a foreigner, I wore the proper garb and tried to hide it out, but I was still very obvious.
Right.
Wearing a watch, right. Sunglasses.
Right.
So, but I looked like a Tuareg warrior at that point, wearing the same garb that they would.
So now I know this is a little off the topic because we're really talking about your invention, but so you go to Timbuktu and you didn't have like, you weren't on a tour group. So you just flew into Timbuktu without having to figure it out when you get there.
That's what I mostly do on most of my trips.
You just go. Yeah.
Just go and figure it out.
Right. Do you even have accommodations? Like if you're going to, you know, Indonesia or something, you just go. And then when you get there, you'll work it out, or you actually have things planned out a little bit.
Well, if I'm taking my girlfriend on a vacation, right. It's another story. But for me, most of the time, just go figure it out.
And along the way, you might decide to go to a different city and then deal with it there.
Yeah.
Just like that. Yeah.
Just keep it free and easy and
free to be. You
see what happens.
Yeah. Wow.
There's good points and bad points about that. Trust me.
Yeah, well, you got to be, like an outdoors guy. I mean, you got to be able to, I'm sure that the desert was very trying for you, but you're an outdoors person. Like you're probably skilled in those kind of survival things, even just from experience. Most people couldn't do that in the desert where they got to sit for 4 or 5 hours in the heat under a blanket.
Most people are smart enough not to do that. That's the deal.
Good point. You know, it's funny.
Why do you think I go by myself all the time? I can't talk any fool to go with me.
You know, I heard a guy give a presentation once. It was a motivational sales type of a conference. And I think the presentation was called The Right Mountain. And it was an analogy, but it was his story about climbing Mount Everest. And I think the first thing he said was there's three ways you can die on Mount Everest. You can die of pulmonary edema, and he explained what that was, you know, where you drown and you know what that is. But for people listening, you'd basically
cerebral
drown
edema and pulmonary.
Right,
sure.
Cerebral edema, right, where your brainstem from the pressure kills you, or you fall off the mountain. Well, after hearing that, I didn't think like that was a good idea. I'm going to go there, you know, but that's the problem. You can't get people to do that kind of stuff. But, you know, do you have one buddy who's like your outdoors buddy who goes on these crazy trips with you, or?
I do have one that I met recently. I met him on Cerro Aconcagua, which is the highest mountain outside of the Himalayas in the world. And that's in Argentina.
Right.
Very nice area.
Yeah, you can die from pulmonary edema or cerebral edema on that mountain, right?
Sure. That one's only 23,000 feet.
Oh, it's not that high.
Yeah, compared to 29,000 on Everest. But it's still, yeah, you can go up. People have gone, experienced mountain climbers have gone to 12,000 feet and actually died after a trip. It happens. So
it happens, right? It's a risk.
One of those things.
Yeah, it's a risk of the climb. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
But anyway, I met this guy on that mountain
Okay. And this isn't the guy who's been your buddy traveling with you for 40 years. No.
No, but for the past over a dozen years, maybe 14 years now, I've been traveling with him quite a bit. He's retired.
Okay.
He has the money. He has the time.
Right.
And he's definitely a wild man. When this guy was young, he made me look like nothing as far as a hardcore traveler.
Right.
But and he's older than I am, and I'm getting up in age, and he's older than me.
He still wants to go, right?
Yes, still at it. We've done Himalayas together several times. We did the Gobi Desert with two hump camels instead of one.
What does that do for you? More water?
I'm sorry?
What's the advantage of two humps? You don't fall off the camel, or there's more water in the camel? Or
well, you've got the dromedary camels, which are in Africa, and then in Asia, you've got the Bactrian camels, which have two humps.
Okay.
And the two humps are actually more comfortable than one.
As they say, two humps are better than one.
Because one, you can fit between them,
right?
Either with the saddle or not with the blanket, and you have a little backrest.
Yeah.
And they also have a better gait than the dromedary. Who would ever be talking about this? The gait is better.
It's part of this interesting podcast.
So it's not as wild of a ride. Right. On the African camels, the single hump ones, it seems like there's no rhyme or reason on their stride. So you're moving around all different directions. Very easy when you're falling asleep to fall off. And I can attest to that more than once. And that's a long fall.
I'm sure.
And then the Bactrian camels, the Asian camels, they have a better stride, a little more like a horse, so you can predict the next movement.
That's funny. You don't even think about that stuff.
Who would?
You're falling off the camel.
Yeah.
Well, at least if you hit the sand, I guess you're okay, right?
Well, actually, I did on the Saharan trip, I did fall and came flat on my palm, and I actually broke some little things within my wrist and had to deal with the whole trip. And act like it didn't hurt because of the camelier and the kid that was with me, because they were laughing too hard, so I couldn't admit the pain.
Yeah, to be a macho guy, you're out in the desert.
Of course, with those guys. Yeah, you fall, you get laughed
at. Yeah, and it's not like they're taking you to the local medic tent. You got to wait till you get back, right?
That's right. Oh. So since that trip, I've done a lot of different desert trips as well as high mountain trips, but it was on that trip that I actually came up with the idea for the extreme mist.
The Sahara trip.
And what happened was my guide, like a week and a half, 2 weeks into the trip, which was unfair, while I'm sitting there roasting, we'd get water from wells when we'd come across. Well, if you miss a well every few days, you die.
There's wells in the desert?
There are wells. The French had dug them probably 100 years or more ago.
Oh.
And just out in the middle of nothing, there's
a well. So if you dig deep enough, you're going to hit water.
Depending on the area. Yeah.
Right.
So
these
wells are not what you'd picture your nice little wishing well.
Right. Where you turn the crank and the bucket comes up full of water.
No, we take our goatskin bucket, hand woven hemp that they make on the spot out there.
Right.
And we tie it to a camel, drop the bucket in, which carries about 5 gallons or so in it, drop it down, let the camel then pull it back up, and we bring our own little pulley, wooden pulley, to put over it and bring the water up along with all the green nasty crickets all over it.
It's God not only, like fresh water.
It's
not Poland Spring.
Terrible. So I had to pump my water while I was sitting there, while those guys would be trying to chill out during those long periods during the day. I'd be pumping my water through
a
filter system.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Yeah, trying to. Yeah, listen, I wasn't going to drink that if I didn't have to. So
yeah, of course,
I'd pump mine, and they thought they were real tough, and no problem for us. They ended up getting sick. I did not,
because they didn't clean the water.
Right, and they're used to it. The kid wasn't, but the camelier was used to it. So
that's funny.
So I'd spend my efforts, my rest time, slaving away, pumping. It's not easy to pump that much water because you're doing by hand.
Right.
And so anyway, halfway through this thing, then we'd put the water into these cut-off truck inner tubes, giant truck inner tubes cut in half.
Okay.
One sewn shut and the other side with a knot on it and a piece of wood folded over. And that was our Gerbas to store massive amounts of water. So we'd have one on each side of one of the camels, and okay. we'd keep those full for our water supply for drinking and cooking.
So like it's a giant flask.
It is. It's a gerba.
Okay. Okay.
You know, just a half round, half moon gerba hanging off on each side of the camel. So
got it.
That was black inner tube, nasty tasting on its own.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And God knows what was in that stuff.
Right. Know, well, it's better than the well, I guess, right? But it can't be much better.
Well, it came from the well. So
oh, what, the gerba?
The water was the poured water in did, from
yeah,
the well.
But you,
into
but you
the
first
gerba.
You filtered it out, right? And then you put it in the gerba.
No. I'd filter it after it came out of
oh,
there.
Oh, get it ready for drinking.
Yeah, just my I drinking water.
Okay.
So the... the water would get, if you can imagine, sitting in the sun, it's already, the sand, the heat coming off sand goes up to 140, the direct sunlight's 120, 30, whatever,
oh,
and it's hitting those gerbas, that black gerba just absorbing
yeah,
it.
Boiling so
it's
just that water.
Just short of boiling.
Yeah.
So that's our drinking water. So about a week and a half, 2 weeks into it, Camilleri shows me a trick. Why he didn't show me earlier. But I was thankfully
you're a dumb
did.
American. He wants to let you suffer for a while.
Of course. I took my metal bowl,
right?
Put water in it.
Okay.
Dug a little depression in the sand outside of my shadow of my little lean-to.
Okay.
I'm sitting there pumping, put the water out there and aim it towards any breeze. And the evaporation process from the heat, the sun, the sand, and also the wind would evaporate the water very quickly. It would take some of it off of it. And what's left behind in the heat transfer is not ice, but really cold, cold water. That
really?
Was, I'll never forget as long as I live, the first sip of that water. So it was just
wow.
ice cold. It was
just
luxury.
It's just physics? That
just physics. Evaporation.
So it's like a silver metal bowl?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's just like a stainless bowl, and then it's sunken into the sand. And
slightly.
It's direct sunlight.
Yep.
And you just
tilted towards the sun and the wind a little bit.
Okay, so tilted a little bit. And then you're just waiting as the breeze, and then eventually.
About 10, 15 minutes later, I'd have a big bowl of cold water.
That doesn't make any sense.
It works.
I know. I believe you. I'm not a physicist. I didn't invent thermodynamics to create ice.
Neither did I. It took the 1,000-year-old trick for me to figure it out.
Right, exactly.
So, right. You know, they've been doing that kind of thing forever. So, having that and getting that big, refreshing drink of water and continuing for the rest of the trip to have some cool water,
right?
It made me immediately think of the mist systems at home. Of course, same type of system. It's a heat exchange, and when the water comes out, it leaves the hot water behind in the hose or the bladder or whatever you're using, and what comes out is cold. So
oh, is that how it happens? Okay.
Yeah. There's a little heat exchange that goes on there as well. More physics, not that I'm an engineer or anything. And
no, but you know,
so
it
when
works,
I,
roughly.
When I got home, that went into my book and sat there for quite a few years again. Now that I'm getting
your
a little older,
journal, basically it's an ideas journal.
Everything. Yeah.
So, yeah, okay.
So I was up on the mountain here in Arizona in Scottsdale, which is right by my office where I'm at now, and it's called Tom's Thumb Trail, and it's
okay.
Nice steep switchbacks that go up, and at the top it's almost 4,000 feet, but it in the summer, I mean, it's 100, today it'll be 110, 112,
oof.
And to get ready for a lot of these trips that I do, I would go out in this heat, put rocks in my backpack, and go hump up these hills to get ready for the deserts.
Right.
If I was going on one, like the Gobi, for instance.
You have to carry a big pack when you're in the desert?
Here, no. If I'm just going out for just a couple hours, I just
right.
carry
That's
a
different.
Day
but
pack.
I mean, in the Sahara, you had a big, what is that, a big pack?
Well, I had it on camels.
Oh, the camels were carrying the thing.
Yeah, I had them carry. I just keep a day
right.
pack on
that
me
was okay
when
with
I
the
get
camels,
separated
right,
so. From the camels to have right. some water. I'd keep a camel back off the camel and on my back.
Right.
So
yeah, that's funny.
So as I'm getting older, I'm going up the hill and it's getting harder every year.
Okay.
Right?
Right. The natural evolution of things, right?
Yeah, so it starts hurt. Everything hurts more as you get older, you know that.
Right.
So I... thought about it, and I thought, hey, I remember in the book I did that miss system. So I resurrected that, got it out, and I decided, all right, let's see this one through. Let's actually do one. And that's how this came about.
I see. So you had already made some notes about it, and then...
Just the idea. No drawings, no nothing. Just right. I still have the book. I think it says something like, put mist system on backpack.
Okay.
And share the bladder.
Okay, so for those inventors out there, like, how did you get started, like, bringing your cocktail napkin basically to a prototype, and like, what did you start doing?
So I tried to figure out what would be small enough to make this work and just the design I would want, and I put my hands in prayer essentially, and I thought that would be a perfect ergonomic shape so that there's no corners that would, if I shoved it in with the bladder, it wouldn't ever poke into it or put a hole in it. Okay. So I just thought this was a nice shape, nice size, smaller the better. But I knew that this was going to be a challenge to get a pump to put out high enough PSI to atomize the water. So it's not just heavy droplets, that it actually gets atomized into a fine cloud. And that takes some heavy PSI. So I was trying to find something over 100 PSI, and that was a challenge for the pump. But I eventually did find one that would go up to 170 PSI that was small enough and light enough to make this work. So I went to an engineer.
Right.
And I went and prayed, put my hand up, and said, this is what I want.
Right.
And it didn't come out that way.
No.
I have to admit. It came out more of a rectangle shape, a little more boxy, still ergonomically shaped, but it didn't come out as planned, because he couldn't make the space work with the parts that I needed inside.
Okay.
So they had to, you have to get with your engineer when you're designing something. And I mean, there's form over function, of course, and you're going to end up having to go to a lot of function. I guess you could go to Apple and talk to them about that.
Right.
So you try to come up with both if you can, but it's not always possible.
Right. But this was,
I came up close.
But this isn't a passive system. So you needed an engine, basically, which is the pump to create this mist with enough pressure.
Correct.
Okay.
And I had to have a battery system that would last long enough for me to be out on the trail.
Yeah.
And I'd have to have it be.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And that could deal with the heat.
Yeah. So, of course, that came down to lithium ion batteries.
Okay.
That would do that. Yeah. So. The engineer's first step, and then and in concert with the engineer, of course, I started looking for patents, trying to find anything out there that was close to this,
right?
See if it was patentable.
Yeah. You never know, right? That's the last thing you want to find out. You get a letter from somebody and say, hey, I own this patent.
Sure.
Yeah, you're producing the product.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And I did actually have a big company come up to me when I was first showing it, when I had it done, and I was on patent pending, and someone did come up to me and say, yeah, we came to check you out. I was at a trade show, and they said, yeah, we thought you had something that we had going. We have some patents. And he said, congratulations. It's not. Now we got to have you in our product line, please.
Okay. Which
he wanted to do a license deal, which we did not end up doing, but.
Okay. All right. So how long ago was this? And so how long did it take to have the first working prototype?
I started this about 2 years ago,
okay,
a little over 2 years ago, and within probably, I want to say 4 months, I had a prototype.
Oh, okay.
I went very fast.
And how many different iterations did they have to go through before it worked?
Probably about, to get it to work, I'm still constantly changing it. My investor wants to kill me, of course, every time I have to make a new mold.
Right.
But the working product, I think it only took us several tries to go through it. At first, I was at Radio Shack with big boxes, electronic boxes and parts and soldering iron and, you know, putting all this stuff into it and really trying to figure it out. But it evolved from there, too, because originally I had a wired button on it, on a wire that you would just attach somewhere to the front of your pack.
Okay.
And I realized I did not want to deal with that. So that was another change on it. So I went with a wireless key fob style so that I can control it from anywhere.
Right. And the first item was a modification that you could add to your own pack, right? Isn't that the first product you came with?
Correct. It's a retrofit kit that would go to any pack, whether it's Osprey, Camelback, Gregory, right, any of the big brands. This would just, the little plumbing 101, yeah, and you'd be able to put it in.
Yeah, you slice it into the tube, basically.
Yeah, I know they can't see this, but right, this was the first product.
Yeah, and that's still available on your website, right? I mean, there may be some updates to it, but...
It is. It's been updated. This one was updated. We have a generation one from last summer, which was really our first summer.
Okay.
And I already did a generation two. The box is bigger. There's a lot of changes on it. And,
okay.
So they can get that on my website, or REI has picked that one up.
Right.
Which for me, stores. That's kind of the holy grail to be in.
Yeah, the outdoor stores. They have them in New Jersey too, REI. So is it on all the REI stores? Like, could I go to the one in New Jersey? And
I know they started with the hot states.
Okay.
I think they're in about 15 or 20
okay
stores, but they're online as well.
Yeah, on the website. And there's a video there too showing the system, I believe, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then, and then you eventually said, well, we got to have our own backpack for people that are, why do they have to buy a backpack and then retrofit the backpack? If they don't have a backpack already, they can just come buy the whole system from us, right?
Yeah, it just made sense. So we call it the jaw pack, just add water pack.
Right.
Instead of a retrofit.
Oh,
so
that's a good acronym.
A lot of hardcore hikers, I have probably 12 different backpacks for different types of trips.
Right.
So for me, it made sense just to go ahead and switch my, which I could do, take the pump out of one system, put in another system to another system.
Right.
And depending on the trip I'm on, and I still do that. But then I decided for most of the things that I do, just the day pack, a standard Camelback style backpack.
Right, with a bladder in it, right.
Yeah, so I looked at the running industry, and they make, they call them vest packs.
Okay.
And it actually has almost vest style in the front, and they're very lightweight. They're very simple products, but you put everything in the front, your phones, your gadgets, your nutrition.
So it's got pockets in it.
Yeah, okay. Stretch pockets and things so that you don't have to take it off all the time to get to something when you're out on the trail.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
So I actually...
Like a fly fishing vest, but more...
A little more backpackish looking, but yeah, similar.
Okay.
So I looked at all the different packs on the market. And to be honest, I'll say this, I kind of looked at everybody's and...
You didn't like anything you saw?
There's lots I like.
Okay.
I'm a big brand favorite of a whole bunch of the different packs, but I just kind of took a little of everything, everybody's packs, the best part of this one, the best part of that one. And I just kind of combined
it
into my own pack.
Yeah.
So now we have the Just Add Water pack. So they can either buy the retrofit kit or the Just Add Water pack.
Okay. And we'll put links in the show notes. People can go and check it out. So, but the interesting part of this story though, because we've told your whole story now, we went from the desert and all this great
sure.
stuff, is that we came into this pandemic and you pivoted your company pretty quickly. So tell us what you're doing now with this system, basically.
So my product is mainly a summer product, of course. It's
right. Outdoors.
Ice to Alaskans, I would
sure,
say,
right.
at this point during the winter.
Yeah.
And except for going to hot areas, South America or something in the
right.
winter with it. So it is a limited product and it is a very niche product. So my gym was closing down before the COVID orders came through from our local government.
Okay.
And it was maybe a week or so before they actually came down the orders. Everyone knew something was in the pipeline, but
right.
no one knew when. So my gym had a meeting, and my gym is directly across, I'm looking at it right now from my office. It's in the same parking lot.
Okay.
So I would go do a mountain in the morning.
Okay.
I live out in the middle of the desert, a couple miles of dirt road just to
you
get.
Do a real mountain, not like on a machine.
Yeah, I've never used treadmills.
So you're in Arizona. There's mountains there.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'd leave the house, go down my dirt roads in the Jeep, get to the pavement, then take another dirt road, go to the mountain, go do the mountain, then go to the gym because it's too far to go back home. So I have a shower there as well.
Right.
And then I just walk to the office right across the parking lot. Couldn't be better situation
right,
for me.
Right, of course. It'd be hard to use the shower now, but eventually you'll be able to again.
Right. So yeah. I couldn't have the gym close.
Right.
I didn't want that to happen.
Like that's going to ruin
your
whole
routine. Disrupt
everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So they said, yeah, because people are really nervous about the sanitation. which no one really had great sanitation guidelines. You know, you got the squirt bottles that everyone is supposed to, or the wipes to wipe down your equipment afterwards.
Yeah, but nobody thought there's a virus floating around that might kill you either. So
correct.
Yeah.
So it's always been a little iffy on the
little
gyms.
Lax,
on
right, exactly.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
So they said that they were going to shut down prior to the order because people were scared to come in. So I said, give me 10 minutes. I've got an idea. And I just walked to the office, went in, took the drink hose off, put a plug where the drink hose was, took my mist nozzle that was normally at chest length.
Okay.
And took that off and extended it down to arm's length all the way down.
Right.
And
so you could hold it like a sprayer. Okay.
And I still have the same nozzle, everything. This took me 10 minutes to come up with.
Right.
And then I have the 8-speed remote control. So I could either have heavier droplets come out if you really need to saturate something, like now hospitals are using the product. So on an operating table, they might turn the speed down to get bigger droplets and saturate. But
okay.
most of the time, they'll turn it up to the high speed for the full atomization and
okay.
whip through the thing. So I went ahead and tried that, gave them the pack. Next thing I knew, they said, we're not closing unless we have to, because everyone felt so good because the pack is so light and so easy to use because it's made for runners. Most of the packs for sanitation are going to have a big 4-gallon plastic jug on the back if you're using
of course.
Backpack
yeah,
style.
They're ridiculous.
Or they have systems that you have to drag carts behind you and with a hose on the gun, kind of like paint sprayers. So not as convenient as this. So I'd venture to say this is the world's most comfortable sanitation pack that I came up with.
Probably because it wasn't made for that.
Correct. Yeah. So they're able to wear it the whole day. And because they can wear it all day, even if they're not using it at that moment, their customers are seeing that they're wearing it. So we just made these sanitation signs that say, notice this location
is frequently sanitized. Very good.
So now we're giving that along with each of the sprayers, so restaurants and things that are using them now. Anyway, back to the original story of that. So I did that, and then I decided, you know what? I've got those Gen 1s from last year laying around. And so I made up some of them, and I donated them to the local hospitals here that were now starting to get their COVID wards put together, and they were starting to see cases.
Right.
So I went ahead and donated some. They loved it. Next thing I knew, their contract sanitation companies or cleaning companies that they always have.
Yeah.
Saw them with it, came to me and said, oh, this is perfect.
Right.
And not only that, there was no other products available because all these expensive systems that start these electrostatic sprayers, which atomizes like mine, but they put electric charge to it, which is great.
Right.
It helps attract to surfaces better. But they're sold out, and they still are. Not only did I have the world's most comfortable system, not tethered to any wires or anything else,
right?
Wireless remote control, you can't buy anything.
Yeah,
they're
yours
all
was the most
stock,
available,
and they still are.
Right. So the water obviously gets replaced with a sanitary mixture of some sort.
Whichever mixture they want to use that they're already using, there's a couple thousand probably different products
so they
out
fill
there.
That. You don't have to worry about that part.
Yeah, so it's a 2-liter reservoir / bladder in the back of the pack.
Right.
And they just put their product in there, turn it on, they're off to the races.
Nice. So you're really able to pivot and help with it.
It's great.
You know, and keep your sales going, because I would think that it's not like REI is going to be ordering these packs anytime soon. They're closed, right?
They have been closed. They're now, of course, now everything's opening back up.
Yeah. And people want to get
everything,
out. But it should help your business, right? Because people want to get out. They're just like, you know.
But now, of course, we're in the summer. So I repurposed. We build all the systems here in-house.
Okay.
We assemble them. They do come from overseas, the parts and stuff. But we do most of the assembly here.
Okay.
So here we made all the mist systems all winter getting ready. Now we have to tear those apart, which again, I mentioned, it doesn't take long, 10 minutes. Now we're getting good, about 5 minutes of pack. So now we got to disassemble them again. And now that summer hits, now we're finding we're having to
go backwards.
Great forethought, go backwards again and put the switch some of them back for the misting and drinking.
Right. But is it the same kit? So when you get the parts, you could either decide whether this becomes a sanitary device, sanitization device, or a pack, right?
It's the only difference is removing or adding the drink hose to it and putting a longer mist nozzle on it for the sanitation.
Got it. So you can really, you can go either way depending on what the demand is.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Because, you know, a lot of businesses haven't been able to pivot. I have a friend who's in manufacturing. They do a lot of embroidery and stuff. They were able to retool their factory and do face shields and gowns. I have another guy who's in custom clothing. He wasn't able to do custom work. So they're doing gowns and things like that. But I have another guy who's in textiles and it's high-end stuff. And they can make gowns that are, you know, like you can wash them 30 or 40 times so the hospitals don't have to keep buying gowns. But that's not what they're looking for, because they're looking for disposable stuff. They can't lay out the money up front for more expensive items. So he wasn't really able to pivot. And then I have friends that just closed. You know, I mean, what can you do?
It's a tough time for so many people. I'm very lucky that this was such an easy pivot for us.
Yeah.
So
now if we're going to release this, I told you we have episodes going out in October, but we're going to put this out early. You ready when all the restaurants in New Jersey are going to call you for to order the system for their restaurant so they can open, and the gyms and the personal training facilities and the salons?
They are calling, to be honest. So far, so good.
Yeah, because they're doing searches online probably, right, for systems. Then they call and they're not available, and then they find you.
Of course. We've only had the website up for maybe 3 weeks now. And
we'll get ready for the
it's not indexed very well. Google doesn't have an index,
right? It takes a little while, right? Yeah,
exactly. So but people are finding it, and we've also gone ahead and sold to some distributors as well, like in New York,
right?
And they're buying them by the hundreds,
okay,
and sending, and they're reselling them themselves,
right? Well, I don't think this is going to be that short term of a line of business for you. I don't think it's like you're going to do this for a couple months and go back to the hydration packs. They're going to need this for a long time. Companies are going to need to buy these things.
Yeah, the world's changed. And that's pretty much the common thought of this industry. Again, right. Which was unintentional for me to be in this type of industry. The hiking's still close to my heart. But pretty much all the chemical manufacturers, the big boys, and a lot of them have reached out to me because I have the applicators.
Right.
So everyone feels that this is going to be the new way of life.
It may calm down
a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's always going to be sanitation from here on out.
Right.
At least through our generation now.
Yeah. Soon you're going to have to get into like replacement parts and repairs and people use it. You know, people do stupid things and they break things and stuff.
And they keep asking because we're not that knowledgeable on the sanitation industry.
Right.
Now they're asking for wands that they can take on and off. So we just made those.
Okay.
Very lightweight, very, very easy to attach. So a lot of people like the hose. So now they can do it either way.
And you don't have any issues about like any kind of certification or anything, right? Because you're just a delivery system.
Correct.
Yeah.
I don't recommend any product. People ask me all the time what product to put in.
Put in whatever you need, right? Obviously, you can't put a gel in there. It's got to be a liquid, but...
Correct. And we say nothing over...
If it works in a spray bottle, it'll work in this, right?
Yeah. So we actually did testing back at the gym days here, which seems like a long time ago, a month ago or whatever it was.
A month, yeah.
Yeah. So we went to an empty building and we took a professional spray bottle, not a cheap one, a good one, that one of the chemical manufacturers had sent me, disinfecting companies, and we used that and did 8 to 10 inches off a floor and saw how many square feet we could do with 5 ounces.
Okay.
And we just extrapolate the math out to a quarter, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And so we'd go through that and we'd even take time out. I'd stop the stopwatch for when your trigger finger wore out.
Right.
Because you can't keep spraying that fast. But we were trying to race it. And then we used our system after that and we got, we're able to save on the highest speed. The lower the speed, the more product we'd use, which is counterintuitive compared to when we're hiking. So the higher the speed, the you go over three times faster covering the same areas as I did with that trigger spray bottle.
Because it's finer mist. Is that what it is?
It's a finer mist, and it got into everything much better. It penetrates into every nook and cranny, every crevice, much better than just a spray. And it at last, it made the product last over three times longer.
Yeah, because it's a finer mist, right?
So we're atomizing it. We're not using it as much, and it's more efficient, and we're moving quicker, three times faster.
Right.
So we're saving product. And right now, when the products are expensive and hard to get, as we all know,
yeah,
trying to buy sanitizing.
It's important. It hits your budget if you're buying this stuff all the time and you can use it long.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this has been something that I didn't expect to happen because I wasn't thinking of the physics when I did it for the gym, but it certainly does work that way.
Right. Well, that's fantastic that you're able to pivot and keep your business going. So this podcast is called The Accidental Entrepreneur. You accidentally became a sanitization company.
Totally accidentally.
As a result of it. But as a business owner and the things that you've learned creating your product, and now you have employees and you run the business and you're either renting space or owning space. I don't know about your space. What kind of things have you learned being an entrepreneur, and advice you have for people if they have an idea and they want to get started, so we can like kind of bring this all together in terms of, we've been talking for like an hour. So all together as an entrepreneur, what kind of advice you have for people and what things that you've learned?
I think the biggest advice I give to people is, again, as I mentioned, I don't know how many people I run into that have that idea. Hey, or I thought that up a long time ago and now look, someone's making them. Act on it. Don't sit like I did with it in a book for years.
Right. You'll find it on a shelf somewhere and you'll be like, I had that idea.
That's the hardest step for any entrepreneur, is that first step off the ledge.
Right.
And that's not a hard step at the beginning, just to take your idea, pen it out, do some basic napkin drawings on your own.
Right.
And then get on Google search. Google has patent search division, and you can go do a lot of it on your own there. Right. Eventually, you'll need to hire a patent attorney, of course.
Yeah, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office is also online, too. You can do searches there for things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the way through.
Right.
So figure out if it's patentable. If it is, your best friend's going to be your engineer.
Right.
They go to a design engineer. Get that figured out. And at this point, you're not spending a whole lot of money.
Right.
And then if it looks like it's going to work, now you're going to spend some money on the patent.
Right.
Pull the trigger on that and do the patent pending. And that gives you a year to figure things out before you go to a utility patent or a design patent on it, whichever you're going to do. And just make that move. That's the biggest thing I can tell anybody, is take your idea and act on it.
Right.
If you don't, you can't. You can't win if you don't play, the lottery says.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely.
But you also have to, which you did, you also got to do some of the market research to know that you think it's a great idea, but there's no market out there for it. You knew that this was from a misting system, that it was needed and it would be purchased, but then you wanted to make sure there wasn't something else out there that was already doing the same thing, right?
Sure. And the hardest thing after, and it still is my hardest thing, is the messaging. Messaging's everything.
Yeah.
If you can't get it out there, if people don't see it. Now, with my mist system, that's a pretty novel idea, to be walking in your own mist cloud.
Right.
So it's never really been done. You know, the little squirt bottles with the fans on them, things like that. But no one's ever done what I've done. And that's a blessing and it's a curse.
Right.
Seeing it's never been done, no one knows about it. So I'm the only one who can educate people on it.
Right.
And that means a lot of money.
Yeah.
Trying to get people to get the message out to people. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of footwork.
Right.
And a lot of computer work. And a lot of money spent on Google clicks and Facebook ads.
And social media. That. You know, I tell people that's why some competition in your business is not necessarily a bad thing. It first of all, they learn things. You learn things. It shows that there's a marketplace out there. It makes more awareness of the marketplace itself and the industry itself. So if you're the only guy... Right. It's great to be the only guy, right? It's all yours. But you also have to make the market, let people know about it, get the word out there, make your mistakes yourself. You know, it's
a double-edged sword, no matter how you look at it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ron, I appreciate you coming on. I know we squeezed this in because of the misting system. I want to get it out there and talk to people. And it's about 3 hours early, I guess, with you in Arizona. Is it 3 hours earlier? It's 1 o'clock.
It
here.
Is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's not 10 o'clock here. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I appreciate spending the time. Get me the, you know, I have the links to your website. If there's any materials or anything that you want me to put in the show notes, let me know, as I'll send it to you ahead of time. Take a look at.
I could give you the Google Drive, by the way.
Yeah. Drifting Through the Sands of Time. That's your book, right?
Yeah.
Right, so we definitely want to put a link to the, can you get the book like on Amazon or?
You know, I don't want people buying it. It's too expensive. It's too funny. Expensive because okay. It, you know, it was a,
but just so people listening, publishing. You did write a book about the whole trip. Your
yeah.
Whole
that
experience.
Yeah, I did on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I'll have CJ.
Okay.
Give you a link to the Google Drive that okay, he can perfect. Put some materials in for you.
Yeah. Sounds
and
good.
And you can pick and choose what you want for your
yeah,
show.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I will, let me just turn off the mic here.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.